The Attack Zone Season 4, Episode 1, Reflections and New Goals. What is up, Dice fans? You have once again stepped into the Attack Zone, where we bring you the A to Z of competitive Dice Masters. This is the beginning of Season 4, and we have decided that moving forward, we're going to align our seasons to the competitive seasons. So with the close of a competitive season at Origins, with Worlds, Nationals, and then Worlds, we stand on the cusp, the precipice of a new competitive season. We're looking forward. It's not going to start in too long with Gen Con right around the corner. Some premier events, some WKO-style premier events with qualifications already on the line. Super exciting, so we bring you, again, Season 4. This is Dave. And finally, I have two people with me, instead of just one. And this is pretty great. So we're getting back to normal here. So joining me on the line, first is our official WWE historian, Randy the Ram Romig. Hello, sir, how are you?
Well, I'm doing fine, brother. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm doing good. I have a little bit of post-con withdrawal as we record this here, just a few days out from Origins. But I also have the pre-vacation excitement because by the time you folks hear this, I'll have already gone and come back from vacation. We were going to Disney World. We went to Disney World, and I imagine that I had a very enjoyable time.
Dude, I heard it was awful.
It's also possible. There's a tropical storm floating around down there right now. It's not supposed to hit. You never know. I mean, Florida is always good for at least a thunder shower in the middle of a day, so whatever.
You just complained the whole time on Slack, and it was miserable for all of us, really.
Wow. I gotta, change my reputation here. Future Dave here. Nothing awful about it. So take that, Randy. And we're back in. All right, so moving on then, we have with us Incredible Hulk impersonator, Mr. JT Homash. Hello, sir. How are things?
Good. What's going on, man?
Hey, not a whole lot. It's nice to be home, but I do miss being in a place where we're all there.
Yeah.
That was kind of awesome.
Yeah, I agree.
Having everybody in one place, however briefly that was I was floored.
It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to hang out with you guys, that's for sure.
It was just to see everybody, I don't know. Especially, I've never had the opportunity to meet, Paul, Michaela, Mike, etc., face-to-face before. You guys, you live fairly close. Pat, I've had the opportunity, when we went down to Florida a couple years ago, we met up for lunch. Mm-hmm. So I've had the chance to meet many, but those guys and gal, I hadn't. So that was just really something.
Yeah, I think PK might have been the only one I hadn't met prior to this, but
yeah, that's true. If I had been able to make it to Origins or maybe a couple more WKOs, I'd already know, like last year Origins, I'd already know Mike and Michaela. But alas, alack. Origins was a lot of fun. Just kind of Dice Masters aside, just overall, how was your con, guys?
Busy. Busy. Yeah, yep. I felt a lot of tension trying to keep up with some college buddies who were there, and obviously Dice Masters friends and TRP friends, and I had some travel for work in the middle of the week that delayed me even getting to the con, and then my family showed up right after we finished the top 32 of Worlds, maybe. Mm-hmm. So there was some tension trying to be able to spend some time with them, and but always a good time. And those are the problems I'm talking about are good problems to have. Trying to hang out with a lot of people. So it's good.
Yeah,
good stuff. How about you, Randy?
Yeah, similar for me. My family was there the whole time. I mean, we all hopped in the van on Wednesday morning. Me, wife, five kids, and we headed to Columbus. And they were able to do other stuff around town while I was doing mm-hmm. a lot of the convention stuff during the day. But in the evenings, I'd take the kids swimming, and then we'd sit down and eat dinner, and I wasn't free to come hang out with everyone else again until after bedtime. So I was definitely getting pulled in a couple different directions throughout the con. And, I mean, also, like JT said, I mean, seeing friends from, you know, this corner of my life and friends from that corner of my life and just trying to make time for everything. But...
Yeah, I hear you there. But I'll tell you what, your kids beat the crap out of me.
They beat the crap out of
each
other.
They're good at that.
Did you see the...
Yeah, that's true.
The arena thing that they had set up with, like, the foam swords and shields and stuff.
Yeah, all the boffers and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, on Sunday when we all went to the convention, I just paid a couple generics and threw them in there and let them whack on each other for about a good half an hour. It was...
Oh, my gosh, I wish I could have seen that. Oh, man. That's great.
Well worth the generics.
Yeah, I really wish I could have seen your kids, like, wailing on each other with those foam swords. I wish I had known. We would have, like, tried to step aside and look. It would have been entertaining.
But, no, I had a fantastic time. A couple of once-in-a-lifetime experiences. It was a great con all the way around.
That's fantastic. Yeah, you got to be on the Dice Tower stream talking with Tom Vassell for a while. That was pretty cool. We were cheering you on.
Yeah. You know, I got a couple of good positive reactions out of that, just based on some comments on the YouTube video of that stream, and got a couple of Facebook likes out of it for Dice Championship Wrestling. By the time this podcast hits, I'll already have my Origins review up on the website, and... there's a link to the Dice Championship Wrestling Facebook page in there, and so if you want more information about what happened at Origins with DCW, then you'll have that information there.
That's awesome. My con was short. I got there on Friday evening.
Yes.
Randy, you had spare pizza for us, which we are very grateful for, and then I get a text from Isaac that's like, get down here now. The fan appreciation event was wrapping up, and Justin Zirin, the president of WizKids, was answering questions. He's like, now, come now. So we bolted. Like, he couldn't tell us Justin's answering questions. He's just like, get down here. But there was still a sense of urgency, so we go. Or at least I do. Randy, you had to finish up with the kids.
I did.
But that was pretty cool, getting to hear him speak. Justin speaks very well of Dice Masters. It was always nice. It's always nice to hear them reaffirm their commitment to the game. Which they did, and talk about some cool upcoming things, even though a lot of it they had to beat around the bush for. So that was great. Had all day Saturday to go around the con. Unfortunately, since I got there so late Friday, I missed all the stuff with Nationals, so I couldn't go and use my qualification and play. I missed the qualifiers as well for Worlds, so I was content, though, to go around and check out the board games. Got a couple of things that I liked. There's something else that I really want to get that they were out of at the con. This great abstract game called Element. And it's beautiful. It's simple. It's elegant. And Randy, actually, it checks a lot of boxes that you look for games that you can play with your wife. So maybe once I get that, I'll like, or something, next time I'm out your way, which I'm sure we'll plan something out, I can show this to you guys. I think you'd love it.
Okay. Very cool.
Yeah, it's a beautiful abstract game. It's almost like if chess and Go had a baby, but was a little less complex. And I'm playing this, and it's an abstract game. I felt like I was like an airbender or something. Like I felt like it felt like Avatar, but it's an abstract game with these little beautifully carved figures and tokens.
It's side
wonderful.
I'm taking the conversation off to the side for 30 seconds. So like,
do it.
2 months ago, I just watched Avatar: The Last Airbender for the first time. Oh my gosh, what a fantastic series!
Yeah, I know, right?
Wow, like, I'd heard some good things about it, and we got a DVD of it from the library for the kids to watch, and it was okay, and then my wife saw it on sale, like, on Amazon or something. She was like, oh, well, we'll just get the whole series for the kids, because it's really good, and I ended up, you know, waiting until they were in bed one night and watched, like, half the series. I'm like, this is fantastic! Like, how have I never seen this before? But, yeah.
It's super good,
right? Airbending, right?
Yeah.
Ah, so good.
Absolutely.
So, alright, back to Origins, back to games.
So I want to pick that up as soon as I can. I did pick up Dicebot Mega Fun, which is one of WizKids' games. And I'll tell you what, I've made fun of some of their titles of games for being a little like, huh? Like that Sidereal Confluence, which is like $5 word, the board game. but I'll tell you what, it actually is mega fun. it's really quick. It's really light. There's a dexterity element because you're grabbing these dice and doing things. It's all simultaneous turns, and it can be over really quick. I loved it. I got a really cool game that's based on Liar's Dice, but better, called Spoils of War. So just a great time getting to see some new games, getting to demo some things. That's what I really enjoyed. We sat down and demoed a whole bunch of games. Everything we had the opportunity to do, we did. And still getting to come on over, check up on progress, check up on results, and see everything going on as the tournaments were happening. That was a lot of fun, too. So all around, a successful con. Didn't get to do the Dice Masters I wanted to do, but, you know, that's okay. Work obligations happened, and there's not much I can do about that. So, upcoming things. As I said earlier, we stand on the precipice of the new competitive season. Obviously, we have Gen Con on the horizon. I would like to get out there for a day. I know a couple of us have talked about a day trip here and there. I'd like to see if I can be a part of that, if I can do that too, because I think that'd just be fun. I've never seen it. I'd like to do it if I can. Still don't know, but I'd like to try. So we'll all have to talk about that. So if I remember correctly, there's going to be all three of a Modern Age, Golden Age, and Draft events at Gen Con. Is that correct?
Yeah.
That's what I've heard, yeah.
And
that sounds...
I mean, Gen Con's just 3 days, and there's one every day.
Yeah. That's amazing. So no matter what you want to do with Dice Masters, you should have an opportunity at Gen Con. Unless something changes, which it's always possible. The best laid plans, right? But that's really exciting. And I believe those are kind of at least on the WKO level. Do all three of those events, does the winner of all three of those qualify for Nationals the next year?
So they haven't released any information about prizing or what's
okay.
What quals look like, but they are each individually listed as a WKO regional. So
then we could assume
best guesses is that it all counts. So.
Mm-hmm. And they've done these con things like that in the past, right? Like Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, so. They've done a WKO at a con before.
Right.
I think
right.
This is the first time where we've seen, you know, multiples, but yeah.
That can only be better for the game, right? I mean, just more opportunities. Doing some things at cons gets some more exposure out there, gets other people going to these things that might not otherwise. I just think that's good all around. It makes it feel bigger when it's at a con. Although I feel like, oh, I'm missing the con, playing a game, just this one game. Still, it makes it feel bigger, and I do enjoy that.
I 100% agree with you.
Yeah. I don't know yet what the PDC has in store, but surely as stores are wrapping up things, we'll start to see some stuff pop up for states and so forth moving on.
Yeah.
I don't know a whole lot about that.
Yeah.
But we can assume that there are things in store.
I can tell you that conversations are happening and
excellent.
That you know, that as recently as yesterday a number of ideas were being kicked around. So you know, considering things for the growth of the game and growth of communities, all that stuff's being considered, and I'm excited for what we're talking about. We'll see what actually comes out, but all of the options that we've talked about, I can get behind. So stay tuned.
That sounds awesome. And then finally, of course, we have the Superman Wonder Woman set right around the corner. That starter set is coming out. We've all had the chance to look at the spoilers, and I want to turn it to Randy as the resident deck building savant. What card are you most excited? What sticks out to you? Something that you really want to mess with?
Team up all day long. My goodness.
Tell us about it.
I don't have the card text in front of me, but...
All right, so team up, Randy. That's each of your character dice get +1 attack and +1 defense for each different affiliation among your active character dice, -1.
Yeah. So right now, there's a couple of 2-cost characters that are modern legal that have multiple affiliations. There's a Guy Gardner that has red and green lanterns. The Lyssa Drac from War of Light, mm-hmm. She has yellow lantern and she's a villain. But yeah, there's a couple of them. And it affects all of your characters, so all of your sidekicks as well. I think that basic action is going to be you know, as lethal as Bard was, to turn a team of small control pieces into an absolute force. Because you can use, you know, Lissa, Dwarf Wizard, and Elf Thief. Those are three characters that cost three or less that have four different affiliations among them. I think it's huge.
Yeah, that's true. You said Lissa, which other one in Elf Thief?
The Dwarf Wizard.
Okay, that's right. Yeah. Wow. That does sound like a lot of fun. Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. And of course, before people clamor, unlike Bard, obviously, you have to buy this action die to trigger it, right? It's not also a character sitting in the field. So I think taking the legs off of it does help balance things just a little bit.
Right. And I mean, you can't poly it in or mutate it in, as the case would be now. But maybe there is something you could do with the boomerang keyword. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of stuff to play with, but I think that is the one card that's on the top of my board to play with.
That's pretty cool. So we'll see that. The spoilers have been out there. I think, as JT mentioned, I don't know if we'll have that in the show or not, depending on where I have to do some edits. It's on the Transition Zone app. So look at it. Play around with it. Let's have some fun because, well, that's why we're here, I hope.
The one thing I can't imagine not putting with Team Up is Super Rare Lady Deadpool.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
For a bolt, not only are you giving everything +3/+3 or +4/+4, but for a bolt, double it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she has an affiliation that's pretty unique to other characters.
Yeah, you're probably
not
going to have on the rest of your characters.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's pretty good. All right, so that's a lot of things that are right around the corner, not to mention some of the sets that we'll be getting a little bit later on this year. I mean, there's just hype all over the place. This could be the best summer we've had for Dice Masters in some time, considering that in the past, the summers have been a little bit slower. So I'm really pumped. Now, you may have noticed that right now we are not doing a six-pack today. That's because of when we're recording and the fact that there were not packs available for me to get at the con by the time I was able to get there and get things. So we're going to have another giveaway, and that's going to be recorded in the future. So future Dave's going to do that, actually probably like right now. Thanks, Dave. Man, there are so many things I want to tell you about that you'll experience in the next like week and a half, and yet I can't. But I can tell you about all of the Patreon stuff for this month. First off, big thank you to all our supporters. Second off, sorry that we're not doing a six-pack. I promise you that's going to be back in big fashion. We want to talk about Batman. We love the set. So rest assured, that's coming. In this case, for this month, we have some special cards to give away. We have some foreign language cards, some things in French. We have a Portuguese promo Professor X, which is pretty nifty. All that stuff's going out there. We're also going to try to include a couple little extras. So to that end, we actually have three winners this month because we wanted to get some things out to a few different people, especially because we weren't doing a six-pack and we had to take the break. So that would be Ryan Slater, Darren McClellan, and Eric Westfall. Thank you all so much for supporting the show. It just blows my mind every month when I go and look at that list of people who are... I mean, some people have changed. We've added some people. Some people have scaled back a pledge, added to a pledge, whatever else. The fact that people have thought about us even for a month just really, I mean, I'm floored every time. So thank you all very much. As far as Ryan, Darren, and Eric go, if you hear this before I've sent you an email, then send me an email, dave@thereservepool.com. We'll get you your stuff very soon. One thing I need to actually go and visit Randy and JT in person for, which is actually going to happen shortly, and we'll get everything out to you. So thanks a lot, everybody, and let's go back to the show. All right, thanks, Future Dave. Let's get back to what we're talking about. Last year, we sat down and we picked each other apart. We talked about strengths and weaknesses and where we were as players and kind of reflected on where we were with the game at that time. And then we set some goals. So now that we're at the end of this competitive season, I think it's a good time to reevaluate those goals that we set look at what we've learned, what we still have to work on, and then set some new goals that we want to hopefully accomplish by the end of the next competitive season. And once again, frame the show around our exploration of those aspects of not just Dice Masters, but who we are as gamers playing this game and the things that we have to do to be good at it, and bring topics once again in that light. Of course, we'll talk about other things because we'll have to. Sets will come out, strategies will emerge, we'll want to do other things, we'll need to do other things. But at its core, we want to talk about how we can accomplish goals and improve as players. So let's start with and see, how did we do? I'll start, because we talked about this earlier anyway, so mine's really short. I had said, hey, I've been floating around. I've done really well at some events. I've had some events where I was a little bit off. I've top aided. I've top twoed. You know, I've done those things. But I haven't won, you know, like a bigger event. And I'd like to do that. So my goal was to win something at least the size of like a WKO. And mission accomplished. That's what I did. If I think about that goal, I think maybe I should have set something a little bit different. Not that I'm unhappy with that. But if as I was thinking about this episode today, I thought, man, that goal was awfully results oriented, right? Like win, not think about the process and how you got to win, but win. I mean, I think that within winning that, there's a lot of prep I had to do and a lot of like changing I had to do for the game. And JT had to like slap me on the back of the head like Gibbs on NCIS and say, hey, stupid, change your view. And to his credit, that was very successful. And I have to also thank Michaela for providing the inspiration. I took a team that she was using and tweaked it, and that's how it went. It got to know it real well, and that was awesome. But that was a little bit of a results-oriented goal, but I'm pretty darn thrilled to have won that and got my Nationals qual, even if I couldn't use it. So what about you guys? Randy, what was your goal? And how do you feel you did with that this year?
My goal, I believe, was just to be a more consistent player. I could play well when pressure wasn't on the line, but sometimes I didn't always do well at events. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to be more consistent, play my game regardless of the stage. And I think I did that. I think I accomplished that. I set that goal before I played in Canada last year, and I think that was a heck of a start to playing consistently, taking top mm-hmm. four in a national event. But even throughout the rest of the season, I beat JT in a rainbow draft weekend at our local store for some D&D prizes, which I promptly handed right back to him and said, keep these with our collection. but even at the WKO I went to, I was second going into the top cut, and I lost to you, Dave. And I feel like part of the reason I lost is because I was coaching you up on how to beat Mask Ring, you know, a couple of days prior.
You were my Mask Ring guru. Yeah, that's true.
You were like, how do I beat Mask Ring? I'm like, oh, you do this and this, and that'll give you a chance. And lo and behold. But, those games we played,
they were really close.
Yeah, one roll changes, and it's a totally different outcome. But, I think I did play more consistently, regardless of the setting, prior to Origins this year, and I guess I'll get more into that later with some of my other goals. But for the most part, I think I did accomplish playing more consistently regardless of the setting and not letting a big stage rattle me.
No, I agree with you, man. I mean, like, after that happened, you made the top cut a couple times going into the competitive, or as we went through the competitive season, and I think that's what you need. You performed when it was there for you. And even in those games, I didn't see any of the nerves that we talked about, or the tunnel visioning, or whatever else that we talked about. You made some really, really choice tactical moves, mm-hmm. and they were the right moves. They just, in those games, they just weren't quite enough, but that wasn't your fault.
Yeah.
I think you made some brilliant plays, and I think they're plays that, like, Randy 2 years ago would not necessarily have made. I think you definitely, you showed a lot of growth this year. I definitely think that. I think you ought to be pleased.
Thanks.
Absolutely, man. That's not a slight on Randy of 2 years ago either. I think we were just all like, Dice Masters was still fairly new. We were all like kind of like wide-eyed. What are we doing?
Dude, Randy of two, you know? Randy of 2 years ago only had three kids. He didn't know nothing.
All right, and with that, how about you, JT? What did you want to do and how'd it go?
So I wanted to eliminate errors. I wanted to play more flawlessly. Maybe another way to say that is to play a technically perfect game. Mm-hmm. consistently, right? So
right.
It's one thing to just get all the rolls and do what the dice tell you and win a game. But it's another to make all of the right choices with everything in front of you when things don't go well. So, you know, looking back, I've definitely made a few errors. I made an error in a WKO that cost me at least a top four as the one seed in the top eight. Made an error, and that was on day two of back-to-back WKOs, so I'm not going to feel terrible about that. There was, you know, I don't know, like 8 hours of driving in between or something like that, but I feel like I'm more acutely aware of those errors if I haven't reduced them, and I'm not, you know, like beating myself up over them. I'm acutely aware, and I feel like I'm dealing with them better. I feel like I've been able to incorporate learning from them a little better. So maybe I didn't fully achieve my goal, but it definitely made me aware enough to probably set me down a path of improvement. So I feel pretty good about it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that almost the route that you took to get there was the stuff we started talking about in the spring about tactical play and what decisions we have to make in that and making the right call for what was happening in the game and not necessarily what the plan was. And of course we had some episodes about that, but I feel like your path towards your goal was at least partially paved with that. I don't know if you maybe feel the same way, but I think that you kind of brought that perspective and developed that. And I guess it's all thanks to that, that Dice Tower episode you were listening to, that kind of put that bug in your ear. But I feel like it was a part of that. It was a part of that. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, the game's still a lot about strategy and, you know, how do you build your team and what's your general approach and, you know, are you racing towards something or are you kind of feeling your opponent out and those kind of things. But definitely, you know, the leaps and bounds that the game has taken tactically, I feel like make errors a bigger issue, right? Mm-hmm. So I think your opponent can capitalize on errors more readily now, and so eliminating those errors, you know, gives you a better chance to stop your opponent from capitalizing and ultimately winning. So I still feel like it's a very important part of the game from a technical mm-hmm. aspect, but I definitely feel like I'm leaps and bounds ahead of where I was. You know, I'd had some success, but I still rushed a lot of decisions, and I don't believe I do that nearly as often now.
I think that's true. Well, that actually segues really well into growth over the last season. Something I think I'm doing better actually goes right to that, is tactical play. I was so used to the have a plan, execute the plan, et cetera, stuff that we were talking about, that I was kind of missing a lot of those elements. And when we kind of sat down and boot camped for that WKO and kind of took the mantra, you know, what is best right now in terms of looking at the board and reading it and making those decisions, I feel like I got better with that, especially. Like, I don't think me at the beginning of the season sits down at those games with, say, Junior, for example, and makes the beatdown read and adjusts my game the way that I did. I certainly don't think I make the read and make the adjustment and do what I was able to do in the finals match there either. that's something I just, I don't think, understood at that time. Because Dice Masters for a long time was like, hey, get your, you know, start off, roll a whole bunch of dice, set up your pieces, and swing. And that's great, but that's also really simplistic. And the game is so far beyond that now. And that had worked for so long that I was just used to it working and I didn't try to adjust. So when that wasn't working anymore, I felt kind of lost, right? And it was, again, boot camping that really kind of set me straight. And that's really, I think, what turned things around for me. And that's what I think I learned the most about this season.
Cool.
Isn't it, though?
No, that's... I mean, ultimately, like, as the game grows, we do too, we have to as well, right? Uh-huh. Like, as the game grows and becomes more complex, our play has to grow and become more complex. Or, you know, you get left in the dust.
They sure were.
So,
we sure would.
We sure would. So
I can speak.
Ultimately, that has to happen. Or you will. You'll just be left in the dust. So it's interesting, though, to be able to look back and point to key specific moments where you can say, "Nah, this was a big growth point." And look at a year ago versus now, and we'll be looking back in a year versus right now, and seeing what changes have come then as well. So I think that's really important. Randy?
I think my biggest growth is, I mean, kind of piggyback off of the goal I set last year. I just got more comfortable playing the game. No matter who I was playing against, no matter the opponent, no matter where, I just got more comfortable playing the game, more confident in my decisions, not so much second-guessing, changing my plan, yeah, I mean, really just trusting in myself more than I had previously.
I think that's true. Randy, I'm curious. Do you think the fact, like, because you and I think, had some similarities in that regard and how we approached some of the events and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if you think, like, you and I never really did competitive gaming to any real extent before this. I mean, I don't know about you, but the first... like, kind of anything that I ever went to was that Rainbow Draft that I came out when we first met face-to-face, not long after you started writing for the site.
Yeah.
I mean, JT, I don't think you did, like, CCGs, but I know you did at least some kind of chess competitions to some extent when you were younger. Is that true?
Only within my school. I never went within anywhere else.
But still, you were competing to some extent amongst your peers? Not really?
My, I don't want to toot my own horn. I never lost very many games against my classmates. Okay. I should have been playing against kids a couple years older, and I would have got trounced. So that just never happened. And I really stopped doing any of that in junior high.
Fair enough. So I guess I don't know what helped you slide into it a little easier than it did Randy and I, because then you didn't really play any kind of competitive stuff coming up.
No, it's just unlimited confidence. That's,
well, you know, yeah. We can all drink from that cup a little bit, but I mean, I think Randy and I, it took a little longer to find our footing. Do you think it stems from that, Randy, just like gaining experience in these kinds of events?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, really with anything in life. I mean, not to go too big picture here, but I mean, I played soccer from the time I was 5 up till my freshman year of college, and then played a couple years of a co-ed rec league after that.
Right on.
And I'm not ashamed to say, like, the glory years for me was that co-ed rec league after college. Like, once, like, I wasn't, I guess, pressuring myself to, oh my, like, I'm with my peers, like, I really have to perform, like, I have to play good soccer. Once I relaxed a little, like, those were the most fun years of soccer of my life, and the best I ever was at soccer. Like, I got darn good. I mean, there were a couple of games I had a hat trick, and it was just, I'm like, wow, I was really impressed with myself. And I mean, it's simple. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Anyways, it's similar to that. I mean, when you stop worrying about making mistakes, when you stop worrying about the outcome and just focus on the here and now, what's my best decision, and just, you know, be confident that you know this. You know this stuff. You practice. You practice Dice Masters, you know, maybe sitting on the living room floor while you're watching a TV show, just rolling through your first couple turns with a team the night before an event. Or you're on the field practicing soccer a couple nights a week. I mean, if you practice something, you get more comfortable doing it. And like once you rely on your instincts and rely on your own decision making, man, it just makes a world of difference.
Yeah, I think that's true. How about you then, JT?
I think two things over the last year, probably. Number one is listening to the dice. Asking myself, how does this get worse? And not re-rolling myself into a corner. There are definitely times where I will re-roll aggressively, and there are times where, you know, I'll take what I've got because it gets me where I'm going just as fast as anything else will. But the other thing I think that probably improved the most over the last year, and I feel like I was pretty good at it anyway, but it became a lot more important with energy oppression and so forth, is just bag management. I feel like I'm really good at bag management. Knowing when and how to use draw globals and resetting the bag and filling the bag. I had a moment in my first turn of the first game against Michaela where I used Villainous Pact on my first turn, and she just stared at me like, what on earth are you doing?
And you've been a big proponent of not doing that.
Yeah, well, so here's the thing. I knew I was going dark side, and the moment you get dark side out, like, your bag resets itself. It doesn't matter.
Absolutely.
That's not something I came up with on my own. Like, Isaac said, just use Villainous Pact on your first turn. Your bag will reset. And then I realized, oh, you know what? You're actually right. Like, this is one instance where you can break, you know, the cardinal rule. Definitely just, you know, knowing the bag. And I find myself doing it subconsciously now. Like, I'll count dice and I don't even know why I'm doing it at times. And then I look at my bag and I'm like, oh, that's because next turn I'll have exactly four in my bag. My bag will be empty and I'll be able to do whatever. It just happens now. And there's just so much more aware, even subconsciously, like, this is where the dice need to be in order to make that work. So that's something that I know over the last year or 15 months I've really gotten a lot better at.
And I think that gets to be important. I mean, I think that really started for all of us with looking at using Ring Res as ramp,
yep,
and then sometimes just Resurrection. But I think it continues to be important. Like, even in a draft, looking at Rip Hunter, if you're drafting Batman and that's a card that you've chosen, using him effectively, how many dice you want to take out of this and shove over to used, and like when, like picking your spots with that, how many of those dice you want to do that, thinking about how that's going to impact future draws. We have Resurrection coming back into the game with the Superman Wonder Woman starter set, do we not?
Yes.
Yeah. So, we also have Resurrection in the game right now with the Darkseid Global.
Well, in a way, we do.
And
yes.
it's on your opponent's turn. And it's glorious. Like,
it really is.
That,
with the limitation that you really can't have more than one thing in prep at a time.
Sure, that doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't.
Like, that global, I'm so geeked out about it, and I would be even more geeked out if it was if it was on a different character, because Darkseid has a better version. So
yeah, the super is pretty darn good. I was lucky to have pulled that one from my packs. Okay, so Rainbow Draft, Batman. Open all my packs, pull Darkseid. Sweet. Then I we would do the prize packs and everything. There was no super rare in there, and nobody else had one. So there were like maybe 16 packs left in the feed. Grabbed all of those. Pulled out one of the White Lanterns. All right, awesome. Like, that was pretty cool. But yeah, anyway, the management continues to be important with the tools that we're getting or getting back in some cases. So it's a good skill to have developed. I don't think I'm to the extent that you are, but I know it's certainly something that I'm doing differently than I used to. Because we can't just PXG all the time. And even when PXG was in the game, sometimes we just didn't want to PXG all the time. But yeah, I agree with you there. In terms of that skill, you've done very, very well with that. All right, then, where are we still falling short? Randy, what do you think? Where do you still look and say, eh, I need to shore this up?
Oh, there's a lot of things, man.
Always going to be, right?
I think this past showing at Origins proved that I can't read the meta. I took a team that was too slow. I mean, plain and simple. I tried to use Team Titans, Hawk Dove, and it was too slow for everything. The only thing it would have been good against was Ultraman, and that was a huge missed call on a lot of people's parts, thinking Ultraman was going to be more popular. But, you know, I wasn't just bringing a basic action that could go against it. My team was very built around the idea of stopping Ultraman and just hoping I could beat everything else. And that was a poor meta call on my part, and that's something I gotta do better.
It was wide open there, right? Like, it was really hard to know what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
A new set had just come out. This is the first thing after rotation, the first big thing. And all that preparation can hinge on what that new set's gonna have. A lot of people have different ideas, so I don't think that's a failing necessarily. I think it was just you gambled one way and it went another. I certainly don't think you're the only one who did that.
No, I mean, based on all of the too big to flies and all the action hate Oracle that we saw on day one at Origins, I would say that other people expected to see more Ultraman as well, but...
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, you guys call me a deck-building savant, and I missed the mark pretty hard on that one, so I'd like to shore that up a bit.
I want to come back at you with that. Does that mean it was a bad deck, or that it just wasn't a deck that was going to work right now?
Not right now, but based on how fast the meta is with all the Guy Gardeners, I'm having a hard time imagining a meta where it's going to be viable. I mean, there would have to be some serious rotations for Hawk and Dove to really have a place, and even then I lose the protection that Wonder Girl gave it.
Right, fair enough.
Yeah.
Hawk Dove, though, you look at that and you just want it to be good, right?
Oh yeah.
I mean, that's the first thing I saw when I look for combos. That's the first thing I saw when I looked at that set.
Obviously, I mean, the cards are printed and reference the other names. I mean, everyone saw that and was like, how can I make that work? And I thought, I've got it. I'm going to make it work. And, yeah, not quite.
Fair enough. JT, how about you?
Well, errors still happen. And, you know, they always will. I think in the... modern meta, you know, most teams are probably going to bring at least two win conditions. I think that's probably the direction we're going. And so reading which win condition to go to, you know, that tactical read can be challenging. And I feel like I definitely struggled in Swiss at Worlds figuring that out. I didn't have any idea at all what to do against Brian Hacker and the Shield Ring team. And it, you know, he said and Stuart said that, you know, Stuart, who ran most of the same team the day before against him, you know, just played and won, shut it down, and I felt like I didn't have any answer at all. So you know, it's clear that I went the wrong direction there. But I took a team to Worlds that had, you know, four win conditions. I mean, I had Guy and Gorilla Grodd. I could go Guy Rush because I had Miri. I had Lantern Ring, so I played Bolt Ring and Fist Ring. Like, and I won games at Worlds with all four of those different combinations. Like, I won a game with just Bolt Ring. Like, you know, I didn't buy Guy at all. So, you know, and Dark Side was the engine to it all, but there are definitely making those tactical reads that I feel like that's, golly, that's something that's got to be shored up, especially heading into the competitive season as WKOs start to kick off and come around this fall and winter. You know, probably in Modern, most teams are going to bring two win conditions, and you've got to be able to read it and go.
Yep. Yeah, that's certainly fair. The fact that a team like yours, which had so many ways to pivot, was obviously able to perform well, speaks a lot to the importance of that. Not only reading it, using the right one, but also trying to see what your opponent is going to set up and do. That's also where we may see the choice between going first and going second become a dichotomy, because we want the information from what our opponent does going first, potentially. Or, you know, where's that critical turn? If that critical turn happens before I have to, for them, happens before I have to commit to a decision one way or the other, we might want to go, you know, first or second, depending on how that goes. So knowledge of how that works is probably shaping up to be pretty important.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. I'm still falling short on deck building. I'm not one to use my own decks. That's never been a strength of mine. I don't necessarily want to be a great deck builder. I'm very happy to learn the ins and outs of a deck and then take that and use it. I've done that well multiple times. I'm cool with that. But I'd still like to be better at it, because then that might help me think a little more about what other people might bring and how to play against it, especially in an unpredictable situation. I wouldn't have predicted a lot of the teams that we saw come out over the weekend at Nationals and Worlds. I just wouldn't have. But maybe if I had a little more of a deck builder's eye, I could start to see some other things, except other than the obvious combos that I just have so much fun looking for. I'm not sure how to improve at that necessarily, other than just to build things and try. I'm not sure how to look off the beaten path for some of those combos or some of those interactions. But I do feel a lot better about making tweaks. There were a couple of calls that I made when I took that Bard Toolbox team to the WizKids Open that were just different. Using Wasp on that team, for example, was a big one, and I was really pleased with that. Some of the basic action changes I made, of course, it turned out not to be necessary because Beholder wasn't around at that time. But I was really happy with some of those things that went on that team and just kind of balancing the give and take. And I don't think I had done that well before, so that was nice. But in general, I would like to be more consistently strong with that, and then also kind of get that better deck builder's perspective.
Yeah, I'm with you there a little bit. I mean, most of the time, you know, even this weekend, I said to Stuart and Isaac, "What are you guys running? Let me teach me how to pilot it. Let me just take that." And I think you're right. Like, if you're the better you are at building decks, the better you are going to be at you know, reading what you know, the meta may look like, and ultimately, probably the better you're going to be able to make the read at the table. You know, what on your team is the bigger threat to your opponent, and what on their team is the bigger threat to you. So that you can know how to play that matchup. So just understanding those things and being able to put stuff together and see those synergies is going to be beneficial in a multitude of ways.
Yeah, I think so. And again, that's not to poo-poo deck building at all, or excuse me, net decking rather. It's not to poo-poo that at all, because I'm a big proponent of it. And I mean, geez, just ask Victor Maya how he feels about taking a different deck and running wild with it. He did a heck of a job at Worlds. I mean, he had just looked at that deck, tested it a couple of times, and that's what he ran with. And wow, did it work for him.
Yeah, but that's Victor. I mean,
Victor's just that amazing.
I can tell you stories about Victor's driving. So, on the streets of Mexico, Victor will drive and text unbuckled and risk all 17 Americans' lives who are in his car. I mean, that's Victor.
See, the guy you really want to trust. Thing.
Freewheeling.
Freewheeling. No joke. We saw a dude on a scooter texting. Driving a scooter, texting. Not at a stoplight. And Victor was like, oh, that's normal down here. What?
Hey, you okay, don't know man. How important that text was.
Victor defended him, so I don't, you know.
I mean, obviously these are more people who need to see the recent PSA about texting and driving, which is a movie we know as Doctor Strange.
The rails have come off.
They have. Let's move on. So all of that said, we're looking forward now to what we want to do next year and possibly even beyond. JT, you haven't kicked one off yet, so tell me, what's your goal moving forward?
This is like not at all a smart goal. it's not specific. It doesn't fit any of the five categories for smart goals, but you know, fluttering around the top tables in a lot of events is great. But I really want to maintain that through the next season. So the word I wrote down is dominate. And what I mean by that is like I really want to maintain a high level of play, and you know, go through a season expecting to perform well and having the results to back it up. But that's what I want to do. I don't want to be satisfied and, you know, have the attitude like, I don't have anything left to prove. Like, you know, it may be true, but I'd rather have the attitude of you know, the pressure's on. I want to get things done. I want to maintain a high level of play. That's really the way I'd rather approach this season. So
they think you're washed up, kid. You got everything to prove.
Yeah. You,
bulletin board material, man. Give it all to me.
I heard Isaac say you were past your prime.
That's what I heard.
Yeah.
Said Ethan was going to beat you every event next year.
Yeah. Well, Isaac's 40 now. His memory's getting bad. So
Ethan's pretty talented, man. I've been saying for a while, and no joke, I've been saying these kids are going to pass us up. They have more time to think, dedicate to the game. They just do. And especially when your dad's addicted to it, like Ethan's dad is, you have all the cards you're going to need. So these kids are going to pass us. They have more time to dedicate to it. Ethan already did a heck of a job at Worlds.
I mean, yeah, he did.
A cool thing for him.
You know,
it's coming. It's coming.
You know, I played against Carter Krause, Andy's kid, in Nationals. Yeah. And the kid played he beat me, but he played basically flawless. Like, knew his stuff inside and out. And I'm like, man, I don't know how old Carter is. I mean, he's older than Ethan, but... you know, Mask Ring knew it inside and out, played it flawlessly, and it's just like, I'm with you. You know, before long, it'll be him and Ethan in the finals of these things, and we're gonna be looking around like, what are we even doing? No, there's some highly talented younger players,
and honestly, I want that because
it's good for the game.
It absolutely is. This game's demographic skews a little bit older, I think, than a lot of other CCGs because a lot of us came from board gaming and not from, like, say, Magic the Gathering or Yu-Gi-Oh! Or Pokemon. Some of us did come from those games, and there's nothing against those, but I think it skews a little older for more of the board gaming crowd or the people who maybe played Magic, but it was years ago, and we thought we were done with CCGs, but it turned out, oops, no, we're not. So I think a shot of youth is going to be good for us. So I would actually applaud that, not only because that would be great for Carter and for Ethan, but because I think it'd just be good for the game.
Yep, I agree.
They have more time to be students of it than we are. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think that's a bad goal. I think it's a good, like, aspirational goal. Like, it's hard to really quantify how you'll do it, but it's good to say this is what I want to do.
If I win everything. Well,
God, you know. Okay. but I think Randy is right to a point, too. Like, okay, you guys are in Browns territory. That's all fine. If I learned one thing from watching the Steelers while Hines Ward was on the team, is if you can't, if there's not a chip on your shoulder, you find a reason for there to be a chip on your shoulder and everybody's rooting against you. And that's what Hines Ward was, like, an expert at doing that. And everybody's against us, even if they're not. And if you can find that mentality, that can help be a motivating factor as well.
Yeah. I think just being from Ohio brings that on naturally.
Yeah, because you have to follow, you know, the Browns. I mean, there's always a chip on your shoulder there.
No, because we've got, you know, the best Dice Masters players location in a pretty concentrated area. I mean, we've got a world champ, a world's runner-up, a two-time national champion. I mean, Ohio's where it's at, man. People better bring their A game. We're taking everyone's best shot.
I'm going to say that, like, let's just talk about our area in general with that, because not far away from you guys is, you know, obviously, we're here, and then a little bit south, Truby, Melissa, you know what I mean? Like, this is actually kind of a good, and then not that far outside on the other end is Detroit and the Shark Tank. Like, this kind of Midwest-y area, Midwest-y into Appalachia, is pretty ridiculous as far as some great Dice Masters players go. Not to toot my own horn, but, like, you guys, Truby, Melissa, again, the Shark Tank, Isaac, his family, his group up there in Glass City, it's pretty bonkers.
Oh, the Rust Belt is just filled with solid players. But, I mean, there's pockets all over the country. I mean...
That's not to say that there's not other great places. It's pretty crazy how many of us are also just, like, right here, also right around Origins, you know? I mean, again, look, Dean and the Columbus crew. Just wow. But yeah, you're right. I don't want to take away from any other region, because there are other really strong regions, but this is it's quite a pocket over here.
I like to boast the Ohio pride maybe a little too much, but
you just don't want other regions to, like, kind of lay claim to that, even though we're on one end or another, like, less than an hour away.
Yeah,
hour or two, but whatever. Per capita, like, I don't know a whole lot of other competitive Dice Masters players in Pennsylvania. So, I mean, like, amongst, if you, like, percentage-wise, well, you know, Pennsylvania has it going just because of me. No, that's really terrible to say. I don't think that can stay in the show. That sounds awful. And I hope there are others. I don't know a whole lot about what goes on in the other side of the state. We have some good players on this side, just they haven't gone to bigger events. A whole lot. So I'd like to see them start. Some people are really excited at the Mr. Nice Guy scene. They're really excited about Batman and are talking about drafting there again, which is great. All right, sorry. Backing off of that, Randy, what's your goal for the coming year?
Oh,
it's like you didn't know I was going to ask this question.
Oh, I've got an answer written down here. I don't know. What I wrote down is to continue to think outside the box. I mean, we've seen some teams and some cards over the last couple of national events that just kind of came out of left field and weren't on the radar at all. I mean, Uncommon Namorita was not a card that people were talking about. In Mexico, for their national event, relaxing was not a basic action that was getting played in some of our local scenes, some of, you know, what we consider, you know, top level events around, you know, our WKOs. We weren't seeing those cards, and they turned around and they won, you know, they were part of teams that won big time events. And I mean, I always try to think outside the box. I've always done it with all my teams. I'll crunch the numbers and figure out, you know, I want this cost character that has this kind of ability. You know what? I'm going to use this. I remember last year at Origins, I took the Bronze Dragon on my Mask Ring team, and a couple people, I think, you know, JT, Stewart, Isaac, all three of them just kind of rolled their eyes like, oh, you're going to bring Bronze Dragon on your Mask Ring team? Okay, good luck. Well, it won me my first round match, and I mean, it was the right call for what I felt I needed on my team at the time. Mm-hmm. The Halfling Thief a couple years ago, it was a powerhouse. And now it's rotated out. But, I mean, just at the time, when PXG was everywhere and bag management was something people didn't have to think about as much because I just save mass for PXG and I'll roll everything. It was a great counter to that. And this year I thought that the common Lex Luthor from World's Finest was going to be kind of that niche. This is my unique mark on this team. And while I think that might have been good in some situations, I mean, like the rest of my team, I think it was just too slow. I was using, you know, I was able to buy it early enough, but it never came up character, and then that set me back. And so when I did miss that roll, I didn't really have anything else to fall back on, and, you know, maybe it wasn't that great of a choice as I thought it was instead of just trying to get to my win condition. But I want to get back to thinking outside the box. Maybe not just focusing on what's going on in our local WKOs. Maybe not just looking at how to try and improve some of the top teams. Actually looking at the bigger picture of Dice Masters out of all the cards that no one plays and really start sifting through and looking at what stat lines, what costs, what abilities are in line with what I need.
Mm-hmm. I think that's good. I mean, you want to maintain that. You want to get back to basics with that, right? Because I also think that's been a big part of your strength as a deck builder.
Mm-hmm. I know we talk about results-oriented thinking, but my poor showing at Origins this year was not just results oriented. It was the wrong approach for this meta, and I want to get back to the right approach.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good to me.
What about you?
So what I'm looking at is not, well, actually this goes beyond Dice Masters. It can go on to other games as well. I want to reduce tilt. Sometimes I'm just my own enemy, and I want to get rid of that. I need to remind myself that, for example, that after I felt terrible after losing my first round match at that WKO, I then won the WKO. Like, I felt awful. I'm just like, nothing's changed. What am I doing? This is stupid. You know, like that stupid voice inside that if I could, I just like rip it out and like beat it to death. I need to minimize that, or at least learn to ignore it. I don't know exactly what all of that takes to have that go away, and that's going to bear out maybe doing some research and whatever else, but it's easy for that to happen, and it can happen to anybody. I'll tell you what, Isaac is one of the most positive people that I know, and even he, like, when he was talking about Nationals, at the end of the day, he was really proud of how Ethan did, and he said that really kind of turned around how his day felt at the beginning when he just didn't do what he thought he was going to do. You know? He wasn't happy with himself. He didn't like how certain things went. And it really sounded like he was down on himself for that. Now, I don't know the extent to which that goes because we didn't talk that much about it. But just in passing, I mean, it can happen to anybody at any time. And that shouldn't be in a position to ruin your day. I mean, we're competing, and we want to do well, and we prepare for this kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, it's a game. It's a fun game. It's a game we like and we're putting time into, but it's a game. So I need to learn how to quash that voice, because it is my enemy. It's not going to allow me to do well. And if I can't regroup from it, I can't count on just regrouping from it every time, I guess, is really what I should say. And then going on and doing well from there. Because if I let it in the first place, I'm already putting myself behind. So I want to figure out how to reduce tilt.
Well, yoga.
I'm sure JT could write your prescription for that.
Do you do yoga?
Do I? Yeah. I have. I don't currently. I'm fat and slow, and I don't take the time for it. But
I don't feel like I can bend those ways.
You'd be surprised how much you limber up doing it regularly. I haven't done it regularly since we lived in Cincinnati, but yeah. Lavender oil. Lavender oil. That's the last one. Last suggestion I'd have.
Okay. I mean, is that all like honest, or are you?
I'm not trolling you.
Okay. It's hard to tell sometimes. JT, for those of you who don't know, is probably the number one user of the troll face emoticon in our Slack chat.
It's my own personal picture of myself.
Well, you don't look like that. Well, I'll have to look at that. I'll tell you what, I don't do a ton with the caffeine to begin with. Yoga, or at least meditation or something, Tai Chi, I've always found that fascinating. Don't know much about lavender oil, but that's interesting. But I think there's also just a mentality and approach perspective that I have to shift. Because this can happen with anything. And it can also lead to like, okay, I enjoy Hearthstone, and there's nothing that's serious about it. Like, I'm not going to grind out to be a legendary player or anything like that. I don't care. Because I don't have the time to do that. But I still get, like, other people refer to it, and I know it's not uncommon to me, ladder anxiety. Like, when I queue up for a ranked game or competitive game, it's like, ah, man, like, what's going to happen here, you know? But it means nothing. It means absolutely nothing. There's a minor difference in your rewards at the end of the season. Why do I get that, you know? And I actually should look into more. There were a couple of folks who were in the esports scene who, like, it turned out were amazing. I can't remember if this was a Heroes of the Storm story or a League of Legends story. But it turned out they were amazing. But people didn't know a whole lot about them because they never played the ranked mode because they had ladder anxiety. And it turned out they had tried out, they eventually tried out for a pro team and made it, and they're pretty successful. But they had ladder anxiety, so nobody knew who they were because they weren't showing up on some of the ranked charts. But it was taking so long for their matchmaking for the unranked games because it was the system was having a hard time finding someone who could who was a fair matchup for where their MMR was. So I should look into some of those kind of stories too and see like what changed for those people, what the mentality was, and what I can do differently. Because I don't know yet, but it's been a struggle.
It's hard too, like, you know, I lost my first match each day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Nationals, like, both days I was pretty loose. Like, I didn't feel a whole lot of tension. But Nationals, that third loss came, and it was just like, all right, well, I'm done. We go play some games, I guess. But with Worlds, lost that game to Brian. It was so demoralizing because I just felt like I didn't have any answers. I did, but I felt like I didn't, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it was you who said, no, this is your element, man. Now you get to play through the loser's bracket and you're all set. And
That's been our joke, right?
Yeah.
Take that first loss and then just go through in place, right? I think we've all done that.
And I just... Like, I think, you know, there's all different kinds of strategies for staying level. But the key to staying level is you can't get too high either. So, it's fun to enjoy the stuff, but if you let yourself get really high, then it's easier. Not that it's impossible, but it's easier to get kind of low too. So, you know, I think you got to take everything with a grain of salt on those days, you know, especially in those moments where things could have gone either way. You know, even when there's huge tense moments, like my top 16 match where, you know, we're finishing up, we're going to time. Not exactly sure how the ruling is going to come down, and if Alex listens to this, you know, what a true competitor and amazing sport he was. But there's, you know, if you're the last match going, there's 8 or 9 people standing around watching, and, you know, you're just trying to stay glued in to the moment and keyed on your opponent and what's going on. It's like, you know, any of that stuff could get you high or low. And so you gotta make sure it's all just like water off a duck's back, and, you know, just like none of it can faze you.
Well, and that's really the thing for me. I mean, you guys know me. I wear my heart on my sleeve. I'm a really passionate person. I get really excited about things. But if something that I like or think should be another way upsets me, I also get very disappointed with it. And that's just me. I get a lot of joy out of things, and if something disappoints me, I get a little bit of rage towards it as well. I'm emotional and I'm passionate. I work now as a corporate trainer at a bank that I work for, and I'm talking to people today about like processing transactions, like super mundane stuff. And I was following up with one of my superiors afterwards, and she was like, "Actually, I was through there. There's a room adjoining that has coffee in it. So she was in there getting coffee. She's like, you talk about this stuff with like passion. It keeps people engaged. That's just like freaking banking. Like, it's so monotonous and dull. And it's just what I do. If I'm behind what I'm doing, I'm like behind it 110%. And so that's maybe part of what my struggle is, and I need to like temper things as a whole."
Yeah, I mean, that's my suggestion.
That's a good thought. I'll have to look into some of that as we move on into this competitive season. All right. Well, that's a good discussion. I think we can all point to some very specific things about how we grew and developed as players, and I think that's pretty amazing. Like, I'm glad we reframed the attack zone in this a little more than a year ago, because it allows us to look back and say we did move forward, we did make progress, recognizing too at the same time that there's a long way to go, and hopefully the listeners have enjoyed this journey and will continue to go on it with us. And please, again, feel free. What I loved last year is that people were putting in the comments, you know, we were ripping each other apart, talking about our weaknesses and stuff, and that comment section got really honest from some people, like saying, "Oh man, I just realized this about me, I gotta fix this," and all sorts of things like that. Bring it on, you know, think about some new goals for yourselves, because if you want to achieve well in this game, like, that's why we have this podcast, to help you do exactly that. Framed through our own experiences, framed through the things that we learn along the way or the things that we're already good at, that's what we want to do. So share those things with us, either in the comment section, via email, of course, mailbag@thereservepool.com. Let us know what you have to say and be a part of the conversation, because we all have so much that we can learn from one another. JT and Randy, is there anything you'd like to throw in here as we wrap up this episode?
Just congratulations to Jared and Victor.
Yeah, Jared and Victor, props, guys.
You know, I mean, everyone who played, obviously, but, sure. You know, going the distance is not easy. And, you know, playing all day, having the testing behind you and being in the moment, especially wire to wire like Jared did, big deal. I mean, that's a very big deal. So definitely just want to give a shout out to those guys.
Right on. I completely agree. It takes a lot. Many props. Much love.
I just want to say to everyone that made it to Origins and, you know, made the effort to say, hey, like, it was awesome seeing all the different Dice Masters players, you know, people I might not have talked to since last year at Origins, or people I messaged with on a regular basis. I know that there were a couple people I ran into. I'm like, oh, we're not, why aren't we friends on Facebook? Yeah, let's make, you know, now we're friends on Facebook. Now we'll actually keep in touch a little bit more. And, but yeah, I mean, just the community's always been awesome for this game, and big events like this just emphasize that all the more. I mean, and if you couldn't make it to Origins, I'm not trying to rub salt in the wound. I mean, even if you couldn't make it, I'm sure you're really cool too.
No, I totally agree. It was so great talking to a lot of people, people I was meeting for the first time at Origins. I was demoing stuff over by Academy Games, and this guy, Chris, he saw my shirt. I was wearing the TRP shirt, and we started talking, and it turns out he's a big Dice Masters fan. He's lived overseas, but he's back in the States for a while. Talking to us about some cons upcoming later in the year, just like really enthusiastic. It was so cool to meet him, and he has some unique experiences that I'm hoping that we can talk about in some capacity with him. Somewhere on the network, this podcast, TRP, whichever, TPA too, really neat. It's so awesome. I mean, thank you guys for being just so great and welcoming. We continue to have the best community I have ever seen grow up around a collectible game. And Origins really bore that out.
Yep.
All right then. Well, thank you so much for listening to us. We know that there are so many ways that you can spend your time, and we're very appreciative that you choose to spend some of it with us. The Attack Zone is a production of the Reserve Pool Network. Theme music is courtesy of Down Team Up. Promotional consideration has been given in the form of a review product. Don't forget to check out our other podcasts, The Reserve Pool every Thursday and The Prep Area, running opposite Tuesdays from us. We'll be back again in 2 weeks, and it feels great to be back on track. And until then, keep rolling.
Cheers.
Bye.
Take care.
Adios.
Vaya con Dios, amigos.
Sayonara.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Peace out.
Tschüss.
Whoa.
Peace out, Andes. We can keep that
Victor
one.
Victor Maya reference.
We can keep that one.
Man,
yeah,
I laughed so hard when I saw that earlier.
It was hysterical. It really was. Oh, man. All right, I'm going to stop.
Okay.